of Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Haney. For children who are facing challenges in life, it's a field of dreams, giving kids with disabilities the opportunity to play baseball. Later in the show, we'll look at the growth and impact of the Joe Nuxall Miracle League fields and focus on technology. Ann Thompson tells us how extremely precise lasers are being used at Miami University to map out molecules. But first...
Great, I'm in no position to tell anyone how to live, but sneaking out like this, quitting, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. Baseball is what gets inside you. It's what lights you up. You can't deny that.
It just got too hard.
It's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everyone would do it. The hard is what makes it great.
That's a conversation between Dottie Hinson, played by Gina Davis, and her manager, played by Tom Hanks, from the movie A League of Their Own. The movie by Penny Marshall tells the story of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, which ran from 1943 until 1954. It was established at a time when many of the men who played baseball had gone off to fight in World War II. Some say the Dottie Hinson character is based in part on Dottie Kamenschek, also known as Cammy. Born in Norwood in 1925, Kamenschek was drafted by the Rockford Peaches at the age of 17 and became one of the league's star players. Joining me this afternoon is Michelle Houts, author of the book Cammy on First, Baseball's Dottie Kamenschek. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Michelle, thank you for speaking with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
How and why did you end up writing the story of Dottie Kamenschek?
Well, the Ohio University Press is the publisher of this book, and they had the vision for a new series of biographies for young readers. And when they asked if I would be interested in authoring the first book in the series, they didn't really have a subject in mind. So we put our heads together trying to find someone that young readers would like to read about. Somebody with girl appeal and boy appeal, and somebody that, you know, had a lot of action and adventure in their life. And we came up with quite a list of potential subjects for our biography, and Dottie wasn't on the list. I hadn't even realized that she was who she was at that time, although everyone knew the movie and I knew of Gina Davis's character Dottie Hinson, but I didn't know who Dottie Kamenschek was. Anyhow, that list went to the board. They were making a decision, and I was looking in the Ohio profiles of Ohio women, a really neat anthology that the press had put out, and there was a one-page entry on Dottie Kamenschek. And as soon as I read her, I thought, oh, this is exactly what we're looking for. So I called the press and said, wait, I have someone different. And everyone agreed that Dottie would be a great subject for young readers to learn about.
So just one page is what spurred you to write about Dottie Kamenschek.
Exactly. One page. That's all it took.
I guess it had to strike you that she was a great role model for young people.
You know, what I knew about her initially was that she was an incredible ball player. Everything that I had read was talking about her skill. But what I learned as I got deeper and deeper into the research was that she was a great leader as well. She was a humble leader. And she was that way throughout her whole life. She was the same off the field as she was on the field. And that was neat to find out. Sometimes when you research famous people, you don't find the most flattering things. And just time after time after time, Dottie was considered a great friend, a great teammate, a great leader with the rookies.
So it came as a pleasant surprise to find somebody like Dottie Kamenschek, didn't it?
It really did. I think sometimes it's hard to have a lot of success and remain humble, and she certainly embodied that kind of person.
Michelle, what is the relationship? I think to put this in context, you have to understand this relationship. What's the relationship between the Cubs and chewing gum and the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League?
Well, Philip Wrigley owned both the Chicago Cubs and the Wrigley chewing gum empire. And so I think it was interesting that he had the thought when all of the players were heading, many of his male players were heading off to war, that he did not want to see Major League Baseball tank during wartime. And so he sent his scouts all over the Midwest to find women who could play baseball. And initially, his idea was they would play and replace the major league players in the big cities. Well, Major League Baseball never did go under. It continued. And so he thought, let's put these in the smaller towns. Let's put these girls' leagues in Racine and Milwaukee and Rockford and Fort Wayne. And that was his vision. It was completely his idea.
And he was doing well enough that he could afford to put this league together?
Yeah, yes, he did. And initially, the league supported itself. In later years, the cities that hosted the teams took over ownership of the team. And then some teams did better financially than others.
Really was a patriotic man, was he not?
Yes, he was. He really supported the war effort, and one of the items in the book that I thought was important to put in there was he donated aluminum that would have been wrappers to chewing gum. He donated the aluminum to the war effort. I thought kids needed to hear about that.
And the league, the league reflected his patriotism in a number of other ways, too, didn't it?
Yes, one of my favorite pictures in the book is the ladies standing before a game during the national anthem, and instead of standing in front of their respective dugouts, they stood in a V to symbolize victory for the United States in the wartime.
And he also was behind selling the war bond effort, if I remember correctly, too.
Yes, and many of the programs from the Rockford Peaches from the 40s will have a stamp on the front that says, you know, buy war bonds. They sold war bonds at the games, and they really supported those the soldiers in that way.
Michelle, talk about the style of baseball they played in this league. It was kind of a hybrid, wasn't it?
Yes, and it evolved over the course of the league, and I have a really nice table in the book, and that was one of the things that we talked about, was having a lot of graphics and tables and book things that would make this book friendly to the middle grade reader. But on pages 38 and 39, it was really interesting to put year by year how the ball size changed from a 12-inch ball when the league started to a 9-inch ball at the end, and how the pitching style did start underhand but quickly switched to sidearm and then was only sidearm for 1 year before it became overhand, and then also how the length of the base paths also changed from 65 feet when the league started in 1943 to 85 feet. So you know, the girls were running almost as far as their Major League Baseball.
More and more. Yeah.
Well, it became more baseball, less softball.
How was it that Dottie Kamenchek ended up in the new league?
Well, Dottie was an only child, and not only was she an only child, but she lost her father at age 9. So she and her mother were very close, living together in Norwood. And Dottie describes herself as one of the first latchkey children. In the 1940s, most of her friends had two parents. Many of her friends didn't have immigrant parents, and she did. And most of their mothers were home when they got home from school. But Dottie's mother worked for Procter & Gamble, and so Dottie's mother was at work when Dottie would come home from school, and she would let herself in, and then she would go play baseball in vacant lots in the neighborhood and mostly with the boys in the neighborhood. And then she began playing for the H.H. Meyer Meatpacking team in an industrial league. And that's where she was playing when one of Philip Wrigley's scouts showed up in Cincinnati and asked her to go to Chicago to try out. That was May 1943. And the thing that really surprises me is how hard it would have been for her mother to let her go as her only child and with no husband any longer, to let her only daughter go to the big city of Chicago. And she did say in an interview later that she only let her go because she never thought she'd make the team.
How many women tried out for the team that first year?
You know what? I would probably have to look that fact up. But
was it close?
Women tried out, and many, many were sent home.
Yeah, I think they took maybe about half the women they tried out, if I remember the numbers right. And I think that's the number they emphasized in the movie, too. It was close to 300. But there was there was only room for maybe a few over, a little over 100 at that point. So
that's right.
You know, she eventually convinced her mother, or I guess her mother convinced herself that it was okay to let her daughter go. How did Cammy feel about making such a big change in her life?
Cammy had a sense of adventure. She was a quiet girl, but she had a great sense of adventure. And I think she was really excited to kind of strike out on her own. But I think the common thread was it was always this love of baseball. She never dreamed. She thought she'd be a secretary, or she never dreamed that she could be paid to play baseball. No girl did at that time. And so it was kind of a dream come true to get the chance to go and try out.
What was the pay like for the women who played in this league?
The pay varied from $50 to maybe $75 a week, and the top players were getting as much as $125 a week at the end. And Cammy was up at that level.
And that sounds like they probably at some point they were making more than what they could have made at a factory job.
Definitely. And Katie Horstman is another Ohio player from Minster, and she says it was a heck of a lot more than milking cows.
But at the same time, in the off season, didn't a lot of these women go and work in the factories and work traditional jobs after that?
They definitely did. And Dottie did as well. But Dottie also went to school toward the end of her baseball career. She was in school during the off season too, taking classes at the University of Cincinnati.
Now, Michelle, from what I understand I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say she was majoring at that time in physical education and in health education, and then she did go on to get her degree in physical therapy from Marquette.
Yeah, and from what I understand, there aren't too many interviews with Dottie Kamenchek, so how did you go about piecing together the facts about her life?
Well, I've already told you that she's an only child, so I knew that she wasn't going to have any brothers and sisters to interview, and, you know, for that reason also no nieces and nephews. So I had to rely initially on teammates, players who were still living in the league, and players that played against her. And since she did play for 10 years, there were a lot of women who played against Dottie or played on the Rockford Peaches with Dottie. She was one of the few players that was never traded. So she spent her whole career with one team. That was tremendous to interview those players. I could get a great feel for not only who Dottie was, but what it was like to play. And I thought for sure that there was no way I was ever going to find any family members. But when I was all the way out in Rockford, Illinois at the Midway Village Museum, which houses a great archive of the Rockford Peaches, I found a small newspaper article about Kamenchek Night. And Kamenchek Night was held in August 1950. It was a night at the ballpark that was all about Cammy. And they honored her, and because she was their star player at that time. And it said just two lines: family from Ohio came to see her play, and it listed their names, which was not Kamenchek, it was Vandenberg. And I started going through Cincinnati looking for the Vandenbergs, and I found her two cousins, Tom and Dan, who were young boys at the time. And they are sweet elderly gentlemen who were willing to give me an interview. So it was just the icing on the cake to finally meet some family. And I'm going to see them again tomorrow evening at a book signing in Cincinnati.
That sounds like it took some detective work for you to put this together.
Each little piece led to the next step. Yeah, it really, I did feel like a detective.
More about the life and baseball career of Dottie Kamenchek after the break, and you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon is Michelle Houts, author of Cammy on First. The book tells the story of Dottie Kamenchek from Norwood, who became one of the stars of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Michelle, were you a baseball fan when you were growing up?
Well, I have to be honest, I was a Reds fan, but not necessarily
That's a good
a
thing.
Baseball fan. Yes. Yeah. My parents grew up, raised me definitely following the Reds. My dad, I have very clear memories of listening to the Reds on radio at that time, and on very, very hot summer nights with no air conditioning, and going to a couple of games, you know, maybe in my childhood. But my family does. I was not a very athletic child. I was a reader. I guess that doesn't surprise you, and a writer. It's not very athletic, so it is a bit of a family joke that Michelle wrote a baseball book.
Well, it's interesting because what kind of influence would you say the Reds had on Cammy and her mother? They were fans, obviously.
They were big fans, and Joanna, Dottie's mother, would take her to ladies' night at the Reds games, and Dottie would watch. Especially the first baseman. She was interested in first base as a left-handed player because of that advantage of having your gloved hand so close to the infield in the pitcher's mound. So she would watch the Reds, and then she would go home in her room and put a pillow on her bedroom floor and put her foot on the pillow and try to emulate the moves that she had watched the Reds players make during the game. So that was an important part of Dottie's life growing up.
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed about the book is the detail that you put into it. You were careful to put things in the context of the time, World War II, the Great Depression, immigration at the time. Why did you feel the need to go to such great detail for this book?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. I think I have I had a fondness for biographies as a child, but I think that a lot of biographies for children written in the old style were very text heavy, with probably 6 pages of black and white photos stuck straight in the center of the book because that was the cheapest way to produce a book. So when the press and I talked about what this should look like, I wanted it to look very kid friendly, and I wanted it to have quotes and text boxes and facts, but I also wanted to tie in to what was going on in the rest of America at that time. I think so many times, as a child, I learned about a certain event in history, but it wasn't until I was an adult that I was able to connect that event with another event happening at the same time. And so the things that, the Depression and World War II and the things that were happening during Dottie's childhood really helped form and mold who she became. And I felt it was important to put that context in the book.
Many people say that Dottie Hinson and A League of Their Own was based in part on Dottie Kamacek, and still there are others who say that Dottie Hinson was really based on another one of the league stars. What position did the movie's director Penny Marshall take on this?
Sure. Penny Marshall has always said that all characters in the book are composite characters, so no character is one person in the book. And that was one of the first things that I set out to kind of settle, because there's more than one other person who believes that probably Dottie Hinson was meant to be either themselves or their mother. And so when I looked at Dottie Hinson and I looked at Dottie Kamacek, there are some very obvious differences. Dottie Hinson in the movie was a catcher, and our Dottie Kamacek was a first baseman. Dottie Hinson in the movie had a younger sister, and that was a very integral part of the plot of the movie, was the tension between the two girls. And as I've said, our Dottie was an only child. So there are some big differences. The big similarities were her leadership skills and her exceptional ball playing skills. The scene where Dottie Hinson in the movie can do the splits and catch the ball, many of Dottie Kamacek's teammates said she could do that too. So there were the similarities were definitely there.
You know, one of the interesting stories you tell us about the uniforms the players had to wear, many of them complained about having to play in a skirt, but Wrigley actually had a couple of reasons for the uniform. There was some method in the madness, I guess.
Yeah, he really wanted this new league to play like men but look like ladies. And that was very important to him. And the uniform threw off a lot of people in the beginning, I think. Dottie was quoted as saying they came to see, maybe be entertained by, you know, a show of girls in skirts, but what they saw was some incredible ball playing, and they were surprised that the girls could play the way they could. The other thing that Philip Wrigley implemented at the beginning, but it didn't last long, was charm school. The girls had to attend.
Like the scene in the movie.
Yes, exactly. That was real. They had to spend their day working out on the field, and then they spent their evenings taking classes, learning how to sit, learning how to apply makeup. And they had a All-American Girls Baseball League beauty kit with certain items that they must always have with them. They must always have lipstick with them. They must always have hand lotion with them and face powder. And that didn't last as long as the skirts did. The skirts lasted throughout the whole time of the league, but the charm school and the makeup kit went away after a few years.
And they had some strict rules. They had chaperoning as well and that kind of thing going on.
They definitely did. They had chaperones that had to approve all their social engagements. They weren't allowed to go on dates unless the chaperone approved. They had curfew. They had a dress code for when they were not playing, and they always had to wear a skirt when they left the tour bus. So they could wear shorts or slacks on the bus, but if they got out even just to go to the bathroom or get a drink, they had to put their skirt, they had to put, not their uniform, but a dress skirt on so that they looked like ladies when they were out in public.
And so it was a league where when you went on the road, you had to pack your baseball gear, you had to pack your cosmetics as well.
Exactly.
How did the fans initially react to women playing professional baseball?
Dottie was quoted as saying, you know, that they kind of thought it was like a play or an exhibit of some sort. They didn't really think they were attending a sporting event, but that quickly changed when they saw the caliber of the play that the women were providing.
Now, this was another historical piece that you put into the book that I thought was fascinating. The league actually had spring training in Cuba at one time. What did the Cubans think of that?
The Cubans loved their own baseball, but they also loved American baseball. And both men and women were very well received as they came down to do spring training in Cuba. And in the spring of 1947, the Brooklyn Dodgers also did their spring training in Cuba. There were several times where I read that the girls' games were even better attended than the Dodgers' games were.
Dottie played so well. Did anybody ever look at her as possibly being the first woman to play with the men?
Absolutely. That was probably one of the hardest decisions that Cammie had to make, but it was almost in a way made for her. But there was a time in which a Florida team had asked her management to let her go so that she could come down and play for them. She would have been the first woman to play Major League Baseball, but she didn't want to go. She felt that, yes, she was a standout in the women's league, but she also felt that playing against, she was not a large girl. She was only about 5'3", I think, and 135 pounds. And she felt that playing against men would just, and she also felt that she would just be kind of a novelty, you know, it would be more of a publicity stunt than it would be about her baseball skills. So in the end, her management did not let her go, and she was fine with that.
Did Cammie have a hard time adjusting to all the public recognition she got?
She did. She did not like being in the spotlight. And one of the questions that I asked when I interviewed a lot of her teammates was, what would Dottie think about this book being written about her? I wanted to know that. And them said, oh, she'd hate it. And I went, oh, no. But many of them said, but since it's for children and since her story can inspire especially young girls, then she would be proud of it and she would want it to happen. So I took heart in that.
What eventually happened to the league?
The league, each of the teams did end up going to their respective cities, and some teams lasted longer than others. But by 1954, all the teams had folded in the sense that they were a part of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. Many of the teams became traveling teams and did some barnstorming throughout America and just played exhibition games against any local team, men or women, who would want to play against them, and continued that way for a while.
And what happened to Dottie after she finished playing?
Dottie went on and got her degree in physical therapy from Marquette. She came back to Cincinnati for a short time and worked, and then she moved out to Southern California, where she lived the rest of her life, not only as a physical therapist, but she was also the chief of physical therapy in a major medical center, and then toward the end went back to treating patients individually herself because she missed the interaction with the patients.
Yeah, so it's good to hear there was life after baseball for her.
Yes, and you know, for most of these women, there was they went on to live their life with this being a forgotten chapter. Many of their neighbors, some of their own relatives, didn't even realize that this was a part of their lives until it came out, and that resurrected the whole story of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And some of the girls, Dottie included, got a second chance, a second shot at fame, and began to sign baseball cards and baseballs at card shows, and really, you know, got some recognition.
You think do you think we'll ever see another Dottie Kamenchuk?
Probably not, because a lot of her story has to do with her era, and you know, and we're beyond that. But how cool that this book came out at the same time that Monet Davis has pitched in the Little League World Series as a young girl on a boys' team. So I think we see the after effects of women like Dottie in the girls that we see today breaking ground and doing things that only boys used to do.
And so Dottie has left a legacy.
I definitely believe that.
Michelle, thank you for talking with us this afternoon. Michelle Houts.
Thank you for having me.
She's the author of Cammy on First, Baseball's Dottie Kamenchuk. Michelle will have a book signing at Joseph Beth tomorrow night at 7. After the break, we'll talk about the Joe Nuxall Miracle League fields and how they're bringing the joy of baseball to kids with disabilities. And in Focus on Technology, we'll look at how Miami University is using ultra-precise lasers to map molecules. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.